To reschedule. Of the public may also participate virtually by logging into the agency Zoom meeting. Any member of the public may listen to the meeting or make comments to the committee using the call-in number or Zoom webinar link. In the event there is a disruption of service which prevents the agency from broadcasting the meeting to members of the public using either the call-in option or the internet-based service, this meeting will not be postponed or rescheduled, but will continue without remote participation. The remote participation option is being provided as a convenience to the public and is not required. Members of the public are welcome to attend the meeting in person. To participate in public comment from your computer, tablet, or smartphone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, click the raise hand feature in Zoom, and you will be notified when it is your turn to speak. Please unmute when requested. To participate in public comment via phone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, dial star 9 to raise your hand. Phone participants will be called upon by the last 2 digits of their phone or by name. When it is your turn to speak, dial star 6 to unmute. We do have members of the public in attendance, and they do know about the public comment cards because they've submitted the ones for tonight's meeting, and I appreciate that. The procedure for tonight's meeting are as follows. I will introduce each agenda item. Staff will present. I will ask for public comments. I will then ask for discussion and questions from committee members. Please raise your hand. The committee then comes to a consensus to move this item to the board for consideration. And please consider putting items on the consent calendar when possible. Any PowerPoint shown at tonight's meeting will be posted to the SCB Water website. And with that, we can move on to item 1 in your agenda, Pledge of Allegiance. And I would ask our new father in the room, Vice President of the Huffy, if you would finally lead us in the pledge.
Thank you, my honor. Please stand, face the flag, and repeat after me with the hand raised of your heart. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. And to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I neglected to mention that we have 5 of the 6 committee members in attendance. Chairman Cooper is away and cannot attend tonight's meeting. With that, we can move to item 2, public comments. Members of the public may comment as to items within the subject matter jurisdiction of the agency that are not on the agenda at this time. Members of the public wishing to comment on items covered in this agenda may do so at the time each item is considered. Comments may, at the discretion of the committee chair, be limited to 3 minutes for each speaker. We do have a comment card for item number 2 from Ms. Boltonar. Please, Ms. Boltonar, would you proceed with your public comment?
Would you like me to stand, or is it all right to sit down?
I would appreciate it if you would stand. Are you asking whether to stand? Yes.
Oh, I have to stand?
You don't have to, but I would appreciate it if you would.
Oh, all right. Why I'm here this evening, and you'll find I put in a request to speak on every one of your items, is that it was my hope, now that it's pretty certain that at the end of the year, our start in the new year, we're going to have a new board. Not necessarily all new people, but a different type of, what would you say, water board. And I imagine they're going to run it quite differently. So I was hoping that it would slow down on the meetings you're having right now, so the people could enjoy the Christmas, New Year. And I was hoping that too, because those are very busy for us. And I read through your agenda and I didn't see anywhere these were pushed ahead, which made me again think, why push them ahead Now, let the new board look and do whatever they're going to do for this community. I'm hoping it's better. I don't know. I just kind of fell into this position when the gentleman that did the legislation for the new board died. And I had been following that for some time. And so I just picked up on keeping it alive. But all of you were well aware of that now. And I can't see, and I am going to speak on the other ones later and let you know that I how I feel about those, because there are a couple of issues there. So that was my concern. I was hoping that it would slow down, let people enjoy the holidays, and then start with this fresh new water company, and hoping it will be good for everyone. That's my hope for it. So that's just my comments with regard to that. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Miltimer. Having no other public comments on things in attendance, anyone online that has public comments, we can move on to item 3. Which is recommend adopting a resolution authorizing the general manager to apply for grant funding under the 2022 Urban Community Drought Relief Program and execute a grant agreement with the Department of Water Resources for the Chagas Wells 3 and 4 replacement wells and well equipment and site improvement projects and the S Wells PFAS and disinfection facilities. So I have my presenter estimation is over here. And center for tonight is Cheryl Fowler. Ms. Fowler, would you please proceed?
Thank you, Director Martin, and thank you for directors. I'm Cheryl Fowler, Management Analyst for the Water Resources Department, and it looks like there's a full agenda for this evening, so I'll make this as brief as possible. I'm here tonight to request that the committee recommend that the board adopt a resolution approving application for grant funding under DWR's 2022 Urban Community Drought Relief Grant Program. This request is further discussed in the written report and draft resolution contained in your packet. The application was submitted to DWR on December 7th and requires submission of an adopted resolution before DWR can make an award if our application is selected for funding. The grant application includes two projects, the S-Wells PFAS treatment and disinfection project for S-Wells 6, 7, and 8, with a funding request of $3.5 million, and the Chagas 3 and 4 well equipping project, which consists of above grade well equipping and site improvements, with a funding request of $2.4 million. The total grant request of $5.9 million represents 25% of design and construction costs for these projects. The grant program requires that the agency contribute 25% funding match, which is about $1.5 million, and up to the balance of funds necessary to complete construction of the projects. Both projects are included in the agency's capital improvement plan, and together the projects will recover up to 16,128 acre feet of groundwater pumping capacity that has been lost to PFAS contamination and or wells taken out of service due to perchlorate contamination. So that is the request. Thank you for your consideration, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Very good. We do have public comment card from Ms. Miltimer for this item as well. Would you please proceed with your comment?
On this one, I just have a question regarding to the PFAS. I've been watching this for many, many years, and I've never seen any real effort on the part of the water company to tell us where the source of the PFAS is and why are they being requested to pay for this. And this has gone on for years and years. And I was hoping also when it goes into the new water company, maybe we could get more action on that type of thing. But I really what I get to with this whole thing is that you're asking for grants, I believe it is, grant agreement, for indirectly, all of us pay for that. And I don't think we should have to be paying for anything that has PFAS in it. It's a chemical that we've been watching for years. It's bad. And also, unfortunately, you've taken under your care by accepting a lot of money, the site that I feel is a source of the PFAS. And instead of doing that, you took a small amount of money or a big amount of money, and you've taken over that site. So I think that's going to be an issue going onward, is that we shouldn't be getting grants or paying for this ourselves when you have a source of that PFAS. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Moltenmeyer. Do you have any public comment online?
No other public comment.
We do not. We can now open it up for board discussion. Remind the board that this is simply a resolution asking, authorizing the general manager to apply for grant funding. So do we have any questions or discussion from the board? Vice President O'Haas.
Ms. Powell, just a quick question, and I know you're already on top of it, but have you received or will you be applying for any letters of support for this grant?
The letter of support that was required under the grant was a letter of support from the SCVGSA, and yes, we did receive that from President Goodside.
Okay. Any other letters of support that you think will be applicable for this one?
No, we did not apply for any other letters of support for this one, as it's a state grant.
Got it. Understood. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Very good. Any other questions, discussion? Director Ford.
Cheryl, the timing of the grant, when did you think that an application would go in, and when do they expect award?
Applications were due by the end of January, and they anticipate that there will be consideration and awards by the end of March of 2023.
The timing is consistent with the program for construction.
It is, and we are able to get reimbursed for any work back through July 1st of 2022.
Great. Thank you.
Any other discussion? Cheryl, thank you so much for your efforts to get these grants applications in. And is there any objection to moving this to the board? And is there any objection to putting it onto the consent calendar?
No
objection. Please move it forward and put it on the consent calendar.
Thank you.
Move on to item 4, which is our presenter tonight is Brett Payne. Recommend approval to authorize the general manager to execute a contract with TriPoint Homes, IE-SD Incorporated for SCB Water's fair share cost to construct the Skyline Ranch Dean Pump Station, including construction quality assurance and control testing, construction inspections, and engineering services during construction. Mr. Payne.
Good evening, committee members, and I'll ask Leticia to pull up the presentation.
Up on our end. Hold on 1 second, Brent.
Okay, thank you. Good evening again, committee members. I'm Brent Payne, principal engineer. I'm also the project manager for the Dean Pump Station for the Skyline Ranch development. My presentation is to seek your recommendation to authorize the general manager to execute a contract with the Skyline Ranch developer for our fair share of the cost for the pump station. So next slide, please. So next slide, Leticia, sorry. Yeah. So as a refresher, here's an overview of our Dean Zone map. You've seen this map a few times before recently. The large green area to the east of the Sierra Highway is our existing Dean Zone. And as you know, we have an existing pumping deficiency of about 1,700 gallons per minute, GPM. And this was identified in our 2013 water master plan for this area when we established certain pumping criteria at that time. The orange area to the west of Sierra Highway is an expansion of the Dean Zone that's being built out as part of the Skyline Ranch development. And this orange area will add another 1,470 gallons per minute of new pumping demand to the Dean Zone. To address this, we plan to construct a new pump station on the Skyline Ranch Road just west of Sierra Highway, and that's shown as that blue star in the lower lower left of the map. The pump station will be sized to cover all of the developer's pumping demand, plus an upsize to cover a portion of our existing pumping deficit. A separate project will be done to construct a pump station for the Sand Canyon Plaza project that's near Sand Canyon Road and Soledad Road. And the board approved that on December 6th, just a couple of days ago. Orlando is the project manager on that one. So that pump station is also upsized to cover a portion of our pumping deficit in the Dean Zone. These two new pump stations will allow us to consolidate our pumping facilities in the Dean Zone at two good locations for improved overall operating efficiency as well as redundancy. So next slide now, Leticia, please. So this is a layout of the new Dean pump station site with an entrance off the Skyline Ranch Road. The pump station will have two duty pumps and one standby, so a total of three pumps. Each will have a capacity of 850 gallons per minute. The rated capacity of the station is 1,700 gallons per minute based on the two duty pumps. The pump station will be enclosed in a block wall building for security. And then the overall site includes an area for staging for like a portable generator in case of a power failure, as well as space for utility trucks and a crane to be able to pull the pumps for repair or replacement as needed. So next slide, please. This table shows our fair share cost breakdown for the various tank and pump station facilities for the Skyline Ranch development. You may recall we created a newer, higher pressure zone at an elevation of about 2267 feet called the Skyline Pressure Zone, and that has two new tanks and two pump stations that are fully funded 100% by the developer. For the Dean Zone, there's a new tank and pump station that we're cost sharing with the developer to make up existing deficits in the Dean Zone. We're doing that by upsizing the facilities that are being built by the developer. The board approved the new Dean tank last September, and that's currently starting construction. And then the new pump station that we're considering tonight will be upsized by about 230 gallons per minute over and above what's required by the development.
Excuse me.
And this equates to about 13.5% as our fair share. Next slide, please. So as a reminder, the developer will bid and construct the pump station under the terms and conditions of a master agreement. The agency will reimburse the developer up to the limit of our fair share of the costs. This contracting agreement allows the developer to be in control of the construction schedule, but it also saves the agency time and cost in administering the construction contract. So we're grateful for that. The responsibilities of the developer and SCV Water are standard parts of the agreement, which you've seen and we've discussed before. So I'll just mention two of the more significant items. One is that the developer posts bonds for the entire total cost of the project. And then number two is that construction is subject to our inspection and acceptance. So make sure it conforms to our standards and what we need. Next slide, please. The developer conducted a public bid and received four bids that are ranging in price, as you can see here, from nearly $2.8 million to about $3.3 million. The two lowest bids were within $66,000 of each other, or about 2.5%, and well within the engineer's estimate. After reviewing the bids for compliance with contract requirements, as was set forth in the request for bids, The developer disqualified the lowest bid by Caliagua because they did not meet these schedule requirements. The developer plans to award to Pacific Hydrotech as the lowest responsible bidder. We reviewed and concur with the developer's analysis and recommendation. Pacific Hydrotech is well qualified and has completed at least five similar pump stations in the last 5 years in Southern California, including pump stations at IRWD, Orange County Water District, and Las Virgenes. And they're just completing our Tesoro pump station as well. So I might just note that the costs for bonds are included in these prices, but that will be paid for by the developer. So those will come off the top. Next slide, please. So here's pricing for the construction-related services, all of which will be cost-shared with the developer. For construction inspections, we intend to self-perform using in-house inspectors, but this budget allows us to contract with a third-party inspectors if we need to over the roughly one-year period of the construction, which is based on 10% of the construction cost. The developer will provide their share as an upfront deposit. For construction quality assurance testing, the developer will hire and manage LGC Valley to perform the specialty inspections and testing, and will reimburse the developer as services are rendered. And then Canon, they're the design engineer of record for this project, and they'll perform technical support during construction, and the developer will provide their share as an upfront deposit. Next slide, please. This table provides a breakdown and summary of the fair share cost allocations. As you see, the developer has the lion's share of the cost at 86.5%, and that's based on that prorated pumping demands. Our fair share is 13.5%. So when you apply the fair share percentages across the board, our fair share totals $442,402. Which is within our fiscal year CIP budget for this project. I might add, just given the time frame of the construction, that we will likely be including some funds or rolling over some funds into next year's CIP, in order to complete the project. So next slide, please. With your recommendation tonight, we plan to seek approval at the December 20th board meeting. The developer does plan to award the construction contract by the end of the year and start construction in early January in order to complete construction by the end of next year. So hopefully by this time next year, we'll have a new pump station. Next slide, please. So this is the final slide, and we're asking that the Engineering Operations Committee recommend that the Board of Directors authorize the General Manager to execute a contract with TriPoint Homes, IESD, Inc., for SCV Water's fair share costs in the not-to-exceed amount of $422,402 to construct the Skyline Ranch Dean pump station, including construction quality assurance, control testing, construction inspections, and engineering services during construction. And with that, I'll pass it back to you, Director Martin.
Thank you, Brent. We do have a public comment from Ms. Noltemeyer. Ms. Noltemeyer, would you please give us your public comment?
Yes, this one is because this is what I've watched so much with this water company, is that somehow there's this big development and you somehow think you have something to gain by it, by putting in a lot of money. What are you gaining with the amount of taxes? That's ratepayers' money gaining that doesn't benefit this developer. It's so obvious to me, and I've lived out here before the city was even brought into effect, and all of a sudden, it's somehow we have a responsibility for what in this? Tell me why the ratepayers of this community have a responsibility to pay part of this. That's my question.
Thank you, Ms. Noltemeyer. I would point out that the developer is paying 86.5% of this project cost, and the balance is going towards a pre-existing pumping deficiency that I'm going to ask Mr. Payne about as we move forward. But thank you for your public comment. Do we have any public comment?
No, we don't.
We do not. We can open it up to board discussion questions. Okay, Director Peterson.
I have a couple of questions. Kind of a history question first. Is the Santa Clarita master plan, where this project is actually part of, as it was last night's project at the board meeting. I was wondering. I was involved with it professionally at the beginning when it was started back 10 plus years ago. But I never followed through and seen what happened to it in 2013 when it was approved. Was it approved with any CEQA type of overreaching on the master plan? Do you know that, Keith or Courtney?
I don't know if there's you mean a program EIR associated to the master plan. I don't know that history.
Do you remember, Jeff?
I don't think there was.
I could probably address that too. I don't believe there was either. When I came on board 2015, that was one of the questions I asked, but they had not done a program EIR for that master plan. I wish they had, but they had not. But the developer did do an EIR for this project, which covered the both the tank sites and the pump station sites. And that was done at the county. That was down at the county level, I believe.
Yeah. So that became a county EIR process, but or secret process. The next question is just kind of like, it's a very small site, I noticed, for a pump station. What are the sizes of those pipelines in inlet and outlet pipelines? I kind of read them in the map, site plan.
So the suction side is coming from our North Oaks zone, and that's a 20-inch pipeline. And that was sized just to keep suction losses to a minimum. And then on the discharge side, it's a 16-inch that goes up out of the pump station up to the new Dean tank site that is currently being built.
Those pipes are existing or new pipes?
The pipes to and from the site right now are actually existing. They've been installed, but just up to the site itself.
For clarity, they are new pipes. Okay. In that we are still in the process of testing them. They were installed recently as part of the Skyline Ranch development and haven't been in operational use yet, but they've been installed. So from our perspective on this plan set, they're existing.
Okay. I was just curious about that. Along with unfortunately, I have a design background myself on some new things, as Brent knows. I was just curious why the pipes weren't put in the access road versus the in that slope, but that's a moot point now. The operations people will have to deal with it in the future.
Yeah. We are getting an easement for that slope, but yeah, it would have been better if they'd been in the access road, but it works.
Right. The last one is about the contract itself. Are there any litigated damages, if I can pronounce it right, for going over the time in the contract?
We don't have liquidated damages in this contract. It's a developer-based contract. So the completion of the pump station is really more on their schedule and their benefit. So we wouldn't have any defined risk or defined penalty.
Okay.
So we didn't include liquidated damages. If we were to do our own pump station, we obviously would.
I find it interesting they take the higher bid or the next higher bid or a lower bid in this case and pay the extra money for 3 months of schedule.
Well, the first bidder, who was 18 months of additional time, or it was additional 6 months beyond the schedule. So they had 6 months of additional time. Mm-hmm. And when they talked to them about actually achieving a schedule, they had proposed a cost that would have made the them equal to or the other bidder.
Yeah, okay.
So, and it was an unfair bid. We would have been challenged on that bid by the second highest bidder.
Yes, it would be.
By missing the contract amounts.
By the last comment about that is that I find it interesting. You know the pump suppliers and equipment suppliers for the pump station?
We don't have material submittals yet, so we don't define what the material is going to be used as far as pumps yet.
So the bid process didn't give you that indication of the supplier?
Not yet, no. They just have a price for the pumps.
Okay. It's a subcontract. All right. But it is a public contract, correct?
The developer is running the contract, but it will be at prevailing wage because we have a fair share cost.
All right. Thank you, Gordon. That's all.
And I might just add too on the liquidated damages, the developer did have liquidated damages, I think in the order of $2,500 a day as part of their contract with the contractor.
Any other questions or discussion from the rest of the committee? Thank you. I have a couple of questions, Brent. That had been any protests from Caliaga, we'd either mentioned it, so I assume there was not.
There was an initial letter protest, but we spoke with them, and it was really more they were upset that they didn't meet the schedule, and they have bid on several projects and have been off by as little as $20,000 on another large project. And so they just wanted to know that they were interested in doing work in our area, and they withdrew any protests they had to this bid. Just wanted to have that conversation with us and let us know that they were interested in doing work. And I appreciated that phone call.
Okay. Did our attorney weigh in on their letter?
He did, and we had a response letter to them that was provided, but the protest was pulled.
No problem. Going forward. Good. Brent, you mentioned in the staff report, and you also mentioned it again, that there was a pre-existing pumping deficiency in the Dean Zone. And this was going to pick up a portion of that. I don't recall reading, and maybe you've discussed it in the past, and I don't recall it. What is the cause of the pumping deficiency in the Dean Zone? Is it additional development that wasn't considered when it was sized originally?
So I think of it as sort of updating standards or codes. So back in 2013, they established the pumping criteria that then, you know, uncovered the need for additional emergency preparedness, emergency and fire refill capacity, which is what's driving this. So, and the Dean Zone is an older zone, so it's kind of developed in bits and pieces over many years, you know, back in the 80s and 90s even. So I think this was just established when we sort of brought it up to current standards, really, for pumping and readiness capacity. And we're going to have another master plan, obviously, that's in the works now. So I doubt that those pumping capacities will go down, but this will at least allow us to catch up to where we thought we needed to be based on our current standards.
Okay, so you kind of touched on it, but Hazen's new work will confirm what the new pumping capacity will be necessary in that zone. Is that correct?
Correct.
All right. Okay, thanks.
Can I ask?
Director Pineberg.
No, thank you. You used a they in there, and I wasn't sure who it was. Was it the Santa Clarita Castaic Lake Water Agency upgrading it? When you were explaining about having to bring up to code, they brought them up to code, I think is what you said. I wasn't sure who the they was.
Sorry. It was the Santa Clarita Water Division, which was part of Castaic Lake Water Agency, and they were the ones that conducted the master plan, the water master plan. And it was, I know it was a long collaborative effort with operations and with, you know, looking at industry standards and things like that. So
Are we making sure that when new development is approved now, that we're asking for adequate facilities to ensure there's, we don't have to go back through millions and millions of dollars to provide these? I mean, I'm concerned about this, and we've had this conversation, but I'm going away anyway, so you won't have to hear it anymore, except maybe from the public.
Each new development, definitely of anything greater than a really small subdivision, if it's less than 40 units, maybe anything larger than that, we're doing subarea master plans, additional water study requirements for those to make sure that not only are they providing their fair share and they're contributing to the appropriate size, making sure if anything is impacted by their development, storage or otherwise, that we can make up for that. Either they have to pay for that facility themselves, including any upsizes and pipes that may reach their site. And in those studies, we also look at our existing deficiencies beyond what they are contributing to see if there's any value added where we can provide the public a benefit by partnering and saving costs to this agency. So both of those are analyzed, and actually that report is referenced in his guide that they did one for the Skyline Ranch development. And that's where we came up with the additional storage that we would need.
It seems like the need for the additional storage is because somebody didn't size things correctly to begin with. And maybe that was Santa Clarita Water Company. It didn't do it. And so when Santa Clarita Water Company was purchased by this agency, the public got even more additional liability because now, I mean, this is millions and millions of dollars that we've approved to.
And I don't know that it was they didn't provide it at the time when those subdivisions were built. I believe they had the correct pumping criteria, but we do upgrade our pumping criteria in order to meet increased fire flow demands of a region and in order to accommodate change in zone, which may not have been aware of at the time that the original subdivisions were built. So as you grow and build out in a community, and conditions, zoning, and fire criteria, fire recharge are done, you will develop these deficits, and then we can use our collected capacity fees from new customers coming in, as well as all of the capacity fees that are paid for by the Skyline Ranch subdivision to contribute to that expansion for that zone.
I continue to not understand when zoning is up, when it's upzoned, or zoning is changed, why developers are in charge for this. And is there buy-in from these future developers? Will they be paying money in?
The future developers will have a capacity fee, and that capacity fee will be their buy-in to that system. As we look at the system and look at our capacity fees in the future, those capacity fees also increase based off of this additional infrastructure we've installed.
Well, it seems like we haven't had good luck with increasing capacity fees because our public advocate stands up for the developers and we aren't able to increase them.
All right. Brent, I think I appreciate the effort staff made to put together an agreement with the developer that I think benefits the agency. If we look on your slide about developer responsibilities and FCD water responsibilities, pretty lopsided. That the developers, obviously 86.5%, it's a good deal for the agency. So thank you for the work that staff did. And I would ask the committee, is there any objection to moving this forward to the board? And even though there is some fund being expended, the lion's share is coming from the developer. So I think it would also make sense to go to consent if that's the board's committee's pleasure.
Yes, two hands, three hands.
Okay, very good. Move it forward and put on consent, Brian.
Thank you.
We can move on to item five. The presenter tonight is Elizabeth Sozak, and it's recommend approval of a resolution authorizing purchase order to Lee & Rowe Incorporated for planning services for the Catala Pump Station and Pipelines Project. Elizabeth, if you will.
Good evening, President Martin and committee members. My name is Elizabeth Sobczak. I am associate engineer and SCV Water and project manager on Catella Pump Station and Pipeline Project. Tonight, I will be presenting the Catella Pump Station and Pipelines Project to request authorization for the project planning services. Next slide, please. Thank you. In SCV water service area, approximately 64 pressure zones has been established. Catella pressure zone is located in north central portion of the agency service area. Catella pressure zone on this map is shown as a star. Next slide, please. Catella pressure zone generally is bounded on the south by the Bouquet Canyon Road, on north by Copper Hill Drive, and on the west by the Seco Canyon Drive. Catella pressure zone boundary are shown on this map. Next slide, please. In accordance with the SCV water purchasing policy, the staff prepare a request for proposal for the project planning services. This year, in June, the request for proposal was advertised on the Planet Beat, and a month later, in July, we received three proposals in response. Evaluation team including the engineering and operation and maintenance staff. Staff reviewed the proposal based on the qualification-based selection procedure, and Lienro was selected based on the following criteria: responsiveness, project understanding, responsibility, project scope and schedule. I would like to mention that this project, if approved, will help meet SCV water objective and strategic plan objective B1 and B2. Strategic plan objective B1 is to plan, design, and build facilities to meet demand, including storage capacity and interconnection between regional and retail water system. And strategic plan objective B2 is to plan and budget for a long-term replacement and improvements. Next slide, please. Due to the operational difficulties in the water delivery into the Catella pressure zone, planning work is required. We will need to assess existing and also future water demands identified. Capital improvements are required to provide adequate water pumping capacity and to ensure water system reliability. Planning work for this project will be built upon master water plan. This master water plan findings, a recommendation, and go above and beyond the master water plan efforts. Based on the current master water plan schedule, at the end of March 2023 and beginning of April 2023, hydraulic analysis data for Catella pressure zone will be provided to Lienro. Lienro planning efforts will consist of defining design assumptions, evaluating alternative design solution, preparing cost estimates, and recommending necessary capital improvements. So the scope of work for the planning services will include project meetings and workshop, data collection and review of the collected data, Catella pressure zone evaluation, pump station planning, pump station pipeline planning, identification of the permit requirements, estimated construction cost, and CEQA support. Lienro, as a part of the proposal, submitted several initially proposed conceptual alternative solutions. Next slide, please. Proposed are 5 locations for pump station. Those locations are shown on this slide as the red marks. two locations are proposed to be on the Central Park grounds and three along Bouquet Canyon Road. Lee and Rowe proposing initially routing for the pump station of pipelines, though they proposing six alternatives. Those are shown in the different colors. Generally, pipelines alternative are proposed to be constructed within Bouquet Canyon Road right away, or without the local street right-of-ways as Festividad Drive or Abayo Drive. All alternatives would be evaluated. An optional layout solution would be recommended by Leandro. Next slide, please. Project schedule. For the project award phase, today on October 8th, we are presenting this to the engineering, this project to the engineering and operation committee. And on based on upon receiving recommendation, we planning to go to the board on December 20. Staff is planning issue notice to proceed to consultant in January 2023 and complete planning phase in June 2023. Next slide, please. Staff recommends that Engineering and Operation Committee recommends that the Board of Directors adopt the resolution authorizing General Manager to execute purchase order for planning services to Lee and Rowe Inc. for an amount not to exceed $330,000. This is concluding my presentation. I would like to ask if this agenda item could be considered to be placed on consent if it's appropriate. Back to you, President Martin.
Thank you, Elizabeth, for your presentation. We do have a public comment from Ms. Noltemeyer. Ms. Noltemeyer, if you would.
Yes, I was just reading to make sure I was right. PFAS has always been a big concern of mine because no one's really doing anything about the source. And that is disturbing. And that's what you're dealing with here again, PFAS, perchlorate, the same thing. Those are man-made things that are coming into our water supply, high demand, and we pay out bukus of multi-millions of dollars all the time. And yet, no one seems to ever go after the source. And that's what disturbs me very much about the water company. I'm hoping that changes next month. I hope we can go to them and say, hey, you're supposed to be representing the public. And find out where you're coming from. Instead, this water company just took over a major contaminated area of the city for a very paltry amount of money. You took over the water coming from that site. Now, if someone as old as myself can figure that out, I don't know why the water agency haven't been able to. And here again, PFAS is listed. Well, where is PFAS coming from? You should know. And perchlorate had been around for years, and all you did was shut down the wells. Just shut down the wells, which never solved a problem. That's how this water agency has operated for years. And we've been watching it for years. I'm saying I have high hopes with the new water company because they will be subject to recall. And I think that is something we've never been able to do. Those are the things that we're looking forward to. But here again, I see the same things always coming up. And with no talk about, I was trying to find anywhere in here where they say, where is it coming from? Or who do we go after for the cost here? You just go back to the ratepayers. And I don't think that's fair. Anyway, I could go on a long time, but if you've read this, you would know what I'm talking about. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Miltimer. Do we have any public comment on?
No other public comment.
Thank you very much. Do we have any Director Planner?
Well, I'm wondering why the board resolution says that the board finds the administrative record has been completed in compliance with CEQA guidelines, and that CEQA findings reflect the board's independent judgment, because it's my understanding that this is a planning document and you're not doing CEQA. From the staff report, that's what I thought I understood. But I thought maybe this was some relic of a previous resolution that didn't belong in there.
No.
No, I'm trying to look it up here. Which
is it's on the R page 21, and it's where it says section one down to the second paragraph from the bottom.
We will look into that before the board meeting. My guess is they're approving it, saying basically we've met CEQA requirements because it's not required to have CEQA.
Exactly. Yeah.
But I will verify that with legal that that's the correct way to proceed on the CEQA statement and the resolution and adjust it accordingly.
Yeah, because it looks kind of funny if you're not doing CEQA. It's for me to say you're complying with.
Yeah. I mean, we are complying with CEQA because you're not required to do CEQA because it's a study, but we probably should be more specific.
And then I also wonder, you know, the city approved a project right in that same area. Are you aware of that?
Yes.
Okay. So that got considered in these.
So Lee and Roe didn't know that in their initial proposal. That's their initial proposal when they did their scope. And we will modify that scope further to eliminate a site if it doesn't make sense due to a city project.
Yeah. Well, they're like putting in a bridge and they're going to concrete the creek there. I don't know. I know we commented on that. So I assumed engineer knew about that, but I just wanted to make sure.
What's your comments? Mm-hmm. Jeff, Director Ford.
Just quickly, is this same pump station going to serve the new Bouquet Canyon pipeline up to Mark in that area, or is this too far south?
I'm not sure about that, actually. Brent, do you know that answer?
Yes. So it's serving the Cotella Zone, and the LARC pipeline is coming off the Cotella Zone. That's correct.
Okay. Very good. Thank you.
Quick question. Three proposals are received. You usually list the names of the companies, and then you select the preferred one. Any reason why you didn't let those two out of your report or presentation?
Lee and Roe proposal was the least expensive, and also provide the best description and most detailed description of services we need. So.
He was just interested in the names of the other proposers.
Oh, I'm sorry. It was
It's just an oversight to leave it off the presentation, or we can modify that.
You know what? You don't have to look for it right now, but it does help
Kennedy
us.
Kennedy Jenks, Lee and Roe, and West Yost Associates. We send the proposal to 7 consultants, and we receive the proposal from Kennedy Jenks, Lee and Roe, and West Yost.
Thank you. It just helps the board members, directors, to figure out who was, you know, most competent for that particular but who provided the best materials for that project, for that particular project, and helps us evaluate, you know, future projects based on that list. So if you guys could add that during the board meeting presentation, that'd be great.
Thank you.
Thank you. We will.
That's it for me. Thank you.
Okay. Very good. These are all our on. This is our on call list that we requested proposals from. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yes. All the consultant we send the request for proposal are on our on call consultant list. That's
and
correct.
This is a professional services contract, so it doesn't have to be low bid, but you did consider cost as one of the best.
Yes. That's correct.
Which was permitted. So. And I think you've gone through your various steps of evaluation.
I should specify, we did not consider cost as part of our evaluation.
Okay.
It happens to be that they were the lower, but we don't. Okay. We will look at efficiency, as in number of hours versus total cost or cost per hour, but we don't look at overall cost as part of our review.
Okay. But I think you've explained in the past your various categories of evaluation and your process.
Correct.
And these are all somewhat pre-qualified firms that wouldn't be on their own call list had we not have it.
Right. Yeah. It's usually a very typical decision. And you're getting into the nitpicky who's actually going above and beyond, who's giving us a boilerplate. And in this case, Lee and Rowe, who is doing a thorough review of the project as if they already have it.
Right. So, and we've worked with Lee and Rowe successfully in the past.
Yeah. All three of these firms.
We worked with all three of them.
Yeah. So it becomes in the minute details where they're actually putting in, who's putting in more effort in the proposal.
I'm curious, Prismar, if I may. Do each of these, you know, preferred on-call engineering companies have a preference for a specific project? Or are all of them kind of all competent in terms of any sort of water infrastructure, water-related design?
Yeah, they're all very large firms. Yeah. So they are able to have a diverse group of engineers that have specialty in the different areas, generally even across the country. So they're able to pull from different resources.
Okay, understood. Thank you.
Okay, and you know, the planning effort is a necessary part of the overall design process. This will help focus the scope of work and improvements for the next phase, which will be the actual design and preparation of bid documents. So. The cost is relatively small, and I think staff has gone through a very thorough process in selecting. Any objection to moving it forward to consent?
No objection. Now please move to consent.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Move it forward to consent.
Thank you.
We can move to item six. Presenter tonight is Mark Amentado. Recommend approval of a resolution authorizing purchase order to Hazen and Sawyer for planning services for the Snodgrass Wells N11 and 12 and 13 and groundwater treatment improvements project. Mark, if you're there, please proceed.
Yeah, good evening, President Martin and members of the committee. My name is Marco Matado, and I am the project manager for the planning services for the Snodgrass Wells N11 and 12 and 13 groundwater treatment improvements project. We have an item here in front of you this evening to recommend approval of a resolution authorizing a purchase order to Hazen and Sawyer for planning services for the Saugus Wells Groundwater Treatment Improvement Project. And tonight I will present this project to you. Next slide, please. The Saugus Wells for this project consists of wells N11, N12, and N13. These wells are centrally located on Railroad Avenue, as shown on the right. N11 and N13 are located on north of Wiley Canyon Road, neighboring many existing industrial buildings. N12 is located south of Wiley Canyon Road with undeveloped lots to the immediate north and south. All three of these wells are within 2,500 feet of each other. Next slide, please. N11 was drilled in, at the top of the graphic, was drilled in 1973. With a permitted capacity of 1,200 gallons per minute, or GPM. In 1997, N11 was placed out of service due to elevated levels of perchlorate above the maximum contaminant level, or MCL. N12, near the bottom of the graphic, was drilled in 1985. It is currently active and flows approximately 1,835 GPM. N12 shares the site with a chemical equipment building for both active wells N12 and N13. N13, near the middle of the graphic, was drilled in 1990 Water pump from this well flows towards the N12 facility at approximately 2,075 GPM. Perchlorate was also detected in this well, but at levels below the MCL. Additionally, trace amounts of per and polyfluoroalkyl, or PFAS compounds, have been detected in N12 and N13. These Saugus wells also have a high concentration of total hardness. Next slide, please. Staff issued a request for proposals for planning services for the Saugus Wells Groundwater Treatment Improvements Project. Three proposals were received, and based on the agency's standard evaluation procedures, Hazen and Sawyer was selected as the most qualified firm to provide these services for the Saugus Wells project. This project will continue SCB Water's strategic plan objectives, D1, achieve 100% compliance with environmental regulations and standards, and D2, proactively install, operate, and maintain groundwater treatment infrastructure to avoid impacts on water supply reliability. Next slide, please. The planning services scope of work includes various levels of data collection and review, with the ultimate goal of developing 30% planning level design drawings for treatment facilities to remove perchlorate and PFAS compounds and address high concentration of the total hardness within the Saugus wells. With the proximity to the Santa Clara River, the planning consultant will need to identify any existing easements and jurisdictional boundaries that may have an effect on the improvements and evaluate their risks on flood and seismic events. Next slide, please. Due to the size of the treatment technologies, additional land will be required. This slide shows a rendering with the final improvements shown on the left of the left half of the render may look like. On the right, you can see the existing N12 facility. Moving to the left, ion exchange treatment systems have been successfully used to remove both perchlorate and PFAS compounds in the past. These systems can be seen near the frontage of the property. Additionally, pellet softening equipment and media filters may be needed to address elevated levels of total hardness. These facilities are shown at the rear. Staff have begun preliminary land acquisition discussions with property owners. Next slide, please. This slide shows the project schedule. This evening, we're here at the Engineering and Operations Committee meeting. We're planning to take this to the board on January 3, 2023. And if the board approves, staff will issue the notice to proceed to the consultant, and the planning services are expected to be completed in May of 2023. Next slide, please. Staff recommends that the Engineering and Operations Committee recommend the Board of Directors to approve adoption of a resolution authorizing the purchase order for planning services for the Saugus Wells N11, N12, N13 groundwater treatment improvement projects. To Hazen and Sawyer for the amount not to exceed $225,000. If appropriate, I'd like to request this item be considered on consent calendar for the January 3 board meeting. This concludes my presentation. Thank you, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mark, for your presentation. Ms. Noltemeyer, would you like to make your public comment?
Yes. This kind of confirms what I've been trying to get through to you about PFAS, perchlorate. They've been there for years, and all they used to do, you just shut down when it got too much. But a lot of that went into our drinking water. We haven't had drinking water for years. We buy our water. I don't cook with your water. And whenever I read these, I get furious that this is still going on. But when you are desperate enough for some developer, you suddenly say, well, we'll start treating these. Anyway, I doubt whether you will do it. You will do it just when you need the water for a developer. That's not a very good statement for a water company. And it says it right here. You read it, don't you? How many years? And you just shut them down. But now, apparently, you need the water, so you're going to try and treat them. And I noticed you don't drink too much of the water here yourselves. Just something got to change, and I'm hoping it will change next month.
That concludes your comment?
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Noble. Do we have any public comment online?
No other public comment.
Very good. We can open it up to board discussion. Ms. Director Pondak.
Well, I have the same comment about section one on page 33 as I had on the previous one. This looks like it's just like a boilerplate that we didn't do any CEQA on this again. So, but it sure looks like you're going to have to because probably everybody's aware that the South Fork gets quite a lot of water running through it, and it looks like you're really impacting the flow. You're right in the floodway there, so you probably have to have an Army Corps permit or something to do that. But you probably know about that. And then the other thing that I'm wondering about is the reason that well 11 and 11 was turned off was because it's a multi-port well, and there was pollution coming through from contamination in the Saugus and ending going up into one of the other ports that were in the aquifer, and in the alluvial aquifer. And that was creating a really big problem. And I'm wondering if everyone's aware of that. I'm sure they are. And if that's part of the planning process to sheathe it or close some of those ports or something like that. I see Mr. Abercrombie.
That is one of the things that we looked at, as if part of the well can be sealed off to isolate particular sources of the perchlorate.
Okay. And I'd like to make a comment on the first. So we actually had our CEQA attorney review that comment in the resolution, and that's the language that she recommended. So,
and then additionally, we have looked preliminarily at the floodplain, and this area would be outside of the current FEMA floodplain for that area. The land itself covers the floodplain, but the proposed building site that we've taken a preliminary napkin look at would be
out of that. It's elevated.
Because it's elevated. It's at street grade. But that will also be part of the study, including CEQA assistance from this consultant.
Well, just for the record, I really object to that language because it makes it look like CEQA was already done when in fact it wasn't. And I think that's difficult for the public when they're reading their staff reports.
Okay, thank you.
Vice President Ozahotsky.
So just on page 7 on your presentation, you can change the date from January 3rd, 2022 to January 3rd, 2023, right? And then on page 6 on your presentation, page 40 on the board packet, Hayden and Sawyer created this preliminary drawing, right? Is that correct?
Correct, yes.
Yeah, I see.
Well, that's it for me. Back to you, President Martin.
I would like, Mark, can you state who the other two engineering firms that bid on this project were?
Yes. So we received three bids, Hazen and Sawyer, Kennedy Jenks, and Woodard and Curran. Our three proposals, actually. Sorry.
We'll add that in.
Thank you. Thank you.
Finished, Peter?
That's it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Dr. Peters.
That's all right. I'm very familiar with this site since I first come to work in the Santa Clarita Valley. I was involved with that pump station and site, and also the perchlorate response that we were going through at the time for the first segment of our litigation. During that litigation, we did a pump test on well 13 in 13 that was very specific. And I don't know if that data was ever shared with the operations folks. Keith, have you ever seen that?
Mm-hmm.
No, it was a very involved test where that we put a packer in the well and we went and specifically test pumped each level of that well, looking for perchlorate and other things, of course. And I remember a comment coming back to us. It's very hard to establish quantities with that kind of test in a well. But I remember a comment coming back to us about VOCs being detected in one area, which kind of goes to my thoughts about how we have been dealing with 201 and 205 with VOCs. There might be some remnants of that in 13. So my thought is that it would be a good time to take a look at the site, because I think you should utilize that site for the most for treating well water, for sure, for those things and for those wells. And then, you know, make sure you can have room for a little VOC treatment.
My piece of land we are looking at, if it goes through, then it would have some extra room than even what we have in the picture.
Is the land already elevated?
Yes.
Okay.
By the way, Lynn, you probably remember the Waukesha engine. Yeah. The Waukesha engine that was
yes.
there.
That's 10, right?
Yeah, that was 10, yes. Mm-hmm. That had a lot of discussion. How to deal with that over the years.
I thought we replaced it with a very speed.
Yeah, we did.
Mark, I had a question. First of all, I appreciate the presentation. I think it's pretty much the way we should be proceeding. We use the same process as the other planning work. The cost is nominal comparatively. But I did want to ask a question about the exploration of water softening. What is the, perhaps Keith, you know this, or Courtney, the difference in the water hardness between Saugus water and the alluvial water, and maybe even in imported water? Is this so out of sync with everything else that softening would be appropriate at this site?
Saugus water's weak.
It's much harder. I don't recall the exact magnitude, but several times. And yes, you know, I think, you know, we're saying explore and look at this. It's been something as an agency or collective agencies we've played with softening, pellet softening over the years in one form or another. As you know, once you had a pilot plant that they operated for a number of years, as you also know, the number one complaint, you know, that all water companies probably, especially us, get is hard water, and you know, which is only aesthetic, but it's still a complaint that's raised and an issue. Pellet softening has the benefit of it doesn't remove all the hardness like a salt softening would, for instance. It removes the calcium carbonate, but not the magnesium. And magnesium is a much less onerous piece of the puzzle, if you will. So the byproducts of this process is basically a grain of sand with a encompassed in a shell of calcium carbonate. And so it's a non-hazardous sort of product that's created. It has uses. When Valencia was using it, we actually were selling it to, or giving it, donating it to a company that used, made like roofing aggregate shingles or something. And they were using that in their process somehow. And it's real big overseas. It's been used there. And so they have a lot more experience in the uses of it. we never produced enough to really go out and try to market it with the one pilot plant, but there should be a way to find homes for it. And I think at this point, it's just something that we should, another piece of the puzzle, if you will, of you find a site to put in treatment because you know you have this particular problem, but you're prudent to try to find a site that will address the other problems that you can think of in the future, and hard water is one of those.
No, I certainly don't disagree. I live right across the river from this place. I knew how hard the water is. So I appreciate that response. Director Pinebeck.
As I recall, I think the Saugus Water in the Newhall area was around 600 total hardens. It's really, really hot.
Yeah,
and then what we used to do at the water agency, and I remember this, is we would blend through and tree connections so that we would bring it down. And I'm very well aware of that because I live in Newhall and I kept it soft. Have to replace stuff all the time.
Okay. Any objection to moving this forward? Nominal comp. I think we can put it on consent with the other planning work.
Yes.
Mark, thank you. We will move it forward to the board, and please, we'll put it on consent.
Thank you.
And that wraps up item number 6. The next item, number 7, this is Keith's item. Director of O&M, Keith Abercrombie, monthly operations and productivity.
Sure. The monthly report, and again, this is covering the period ending October of 2022. The report is item 7 in your packet. The one thing I wanted to point out on it is we did make a formatting change to try to provide some additional information and make it a little easier to follow. And if you would look at one of the pages in particular, like maybe page 24 of 102, what we did, you've always seen the bars running across the top and the bottom, the red lines, and those red lines show the historical high water level in the well, the historical low water level in the well. But if you're looking at like the second page of each well, which is a 5-year kind of snapshot that we created to allow you to sort of blow it up and see what's happening, you don't really know when and where or what those numbers were, because chances are they might have occurred before the 5-year period. So we're adding the numbers to these bars. So you will see on this one, for instance, that the high water level was 19.75 feet. And at the right side of the bar, we're adding an indication to tell you when that was, so you don't have to go to the front graph and try to, you know, look and figure it out. So no data changing. It's all the same. We're just adding that piece of data to help clarify that.
Thank you.
So that's all I have.
In the next one.
It's in this report.
It's in it. Okay. Good. Thank you. I have no public comment cards on this item. Do you have any members of the public?
No, I don't.
You do not? All right. So this is an informational item. So any questions for Mr. Abercrombie at this point? Mm-hmm. My only question is there anything in these graphs that would cause you concern about the declining well level?
No, I mean, we're not setting new levels anywhere. We obviously have a lot of groundwater wells off because of PFAS. But even wells that we're running, like in wells or Valley Center, which has now been online for a few months, you're seeing declines as we would expect, you know, going into the end of the year, if you will. But not anything drastic. We may see some recoveries even from the little bits of rains we've received over the past month, but again, those aren't in this report, which is as of now.
Just out of curiosity, is the GSA team, are they looking at these numbers?
Yes.
When you publish them?
Yes, like these are provided to them. As well as a lot of other information on that on a monthly basis. And we actually meet with people that are on that team as well as a water resources group regularly to review levels, new sources of supply, which we're using. So, okay.
Thank you very much. Any other questions for Mr. Abercrombie? Seeing none, we can thank you for the presentation. We can move on to item 8, capital improvement projects, construction status reports. Mr. Mayor.
Thank you very much. Item number 8, page 145 in your packet, has the list of the capital improvement projects and their status. As you can see, we have a lot of projects closing out, and I will go over that a little bit more during the engineering section report on the number of projects we've opened and number of ones we've closed in the last couple of years. Quite a large number of projects. So we'll go over those numbers in that section report. That's all I have for this.
Do any public comment?
No.
Okay. Open it up to board discussion. You have any questions for Mr. Mayo on this report? Any comments? Seeing none, my normal or often comment about the job that staff does in controlling change orders. If you refer to page 145 and see all of those projects are ranging from almost all of them are 90 to 99% complete, and with the exception of the Vista Canyon project, which is at 9.99, they all are well within a very acceptable range for change order rates. So we appreciate the work that staff does that manage the projects and keep those numbers under control. And that's my comment. Unless there's anything else, we can move on to item 9, also Mr. Mayo.
Thank you very much. We've highlighted our planning calendar now, so we actually have this month highlighted. You see we have 4 agenda items. We moved some of them to the December 20th, just making sure we are moving those projects along. And then we have many new items coming in January and February, as you can see, trying to balance the number of projects we have coming to each of this meeting, trying to hold it between 4 and 5, because obviously more than that, and it's going to get pretty long as we go here. But we may or may not see that in February, depending on how some of our projects land out here. We will try to continue to do that and balance our project out so that we can give you thorough presentations and give you all the information.
Any public comment?
No public comment.
I'll just jump in and say thank you for highlighting that call. It makes it a lot easier to read the button. Okay. Any other comments from the board?
Just a quick question. Do you anticipate any projects that were not listed on the budget for this year, this fiscal year?
The portions of the NWEL were not on the budget for this fiscal year, and we may, depending on the board's recommendations on December 20th, when we bring to you, there may be some costs associated with that project, advancing that project.
Okay. Thank you. Back to you, President Martin.
That concludes item 9, planning calendar. We can move on to item 10, general report on treatment, distribution operations, maintenance services section activities. Mr. Abercrombie.
Just a few things to point out. As you know, we put the NWELS PFAS treatment system in place, I believe, the end of 2020. We produced just over 11,000 acre feet through that system since it was put into operation. It's operating well. We now have a second facility that a lot of you went for the ribbon cutting for Valley Center well. That well's been producing are in operation just about 2 months, and we've produced about 220 acre feet out of that well so far. We have, the board had approved a PFAS pilot project where we would have a consultant work with us to create a pilot system at one of our well sites to evaluate multiple types of treatment, resins and whatnot to remove PFAS. That is actually set to start in January, so we'll be seeing some work starting on that this coming year. We are also, operations will be working with the consultant that's doing the master plan update for the agency. They're going to be doing a part of the plan, which is involves field condition assessments, where they go out and visit sites and evaluate the physical condition of the sites with a long list of, you know, assets and whatnot. Not every site, but there was a process that we went through to sort of prioritize, and that was a collaborative effort between engineering and operations to put that together. So operations staff will be accompanying them around over the next 4 to 6 weeks to pick up all of those, all of that data as part of the master plan process. You also recall the turbidity event that we had with the freak little rainstorm a few months back at the treatment plants. Operations is working with a consultant to put together a process of doing a sort of a recap of understanding of all the actions taken and what might be taken better, done different in the future, what training we might offer, what improvements in the, you know, physical operations that we're doing at each site, as well as possible suggestions for physical improvements at the plants or a new piece of equipment or something we should have to ward off these type of events in the future. Well, Q2, as you know, has been offline for a number of years. A treatment system has been built and ready to go for a number of years. We are close. I don't want to jinx ourselves, but we anticipate getting a permit from the Division of Drinking Water, hopefully within the month. Similarly, for well V201, that well is going through a permitting and review process with DEW. We expect the last round of submittals and so forth to be made from us to DEW before the end of the year. And then this well will be going through what's called a 97005 process, which means there'll be public hearings and outreach and things that DDW orchestrates. And we anticipate that that will likely not happen, you know, probably until late spring or summer. So it's a little further out, but we're still in the process of, you know, getting the VOC treatment built there. So it's not really holding us up yet, but we're pushing forward on that. And I believe that's all I had to report. Oh, the last thing I wanted to report was the AMI project, which I've reported on at each meeting. We've up to just under 4,400 meters changed out of the 5,000. The last 600 to go are sort of more or less commercial type settings. And so they're a little more involved than the typical homeowner meter. So we expect those to take us a little longer. So we don't anticipate we're going to finish by the end of the year, like I said last time, but we think we'll be done in January. And that concludes my report.
Thank you, Mr. Abercrombie. Do we have any public comment?
No public comment.
We do not have any public comment. Committee, have any? Vice President, yes.
Thank you for the report. We'll be looking forward to that PFAS media pilot program results. Just curious, and this would have been brought here over their email, but any water theft on the outskirts of SCU Water's division, like northwest area, anything like that?
Not that that's been brought to my attention recently. We certainly have had in the past, and it's not limited to the outskirts. It's more or less involved with a water truck and somebody who, in some cases, they have water meters that they got from us, but the extra effort to connect it was not worth it. But it is worth it if we catch them. So we do try to, you know, work through that. So I don't know of anything specific recently happening, but we do have, you know, patrols and people are watching, and we're trying to address that if we find it.
Okay. So for me, thank you.
Director Peterson.
Keith, Saugus 1-2. Has it been full capacity out of those wells recently in pumping?
No, those two wells are probably around 700 and something gallons a minute right now. They need some rehabilitation. We're in the process of, you know, we've been sort of, We knew we needed to do that going into the summer, but we didn't think it was a good time to shut the wells off because 700 gallons a minute is better than zero. And you're typically going to be off for a number of months while you do the rehab work. So we did pull the pumps and motors and do some downhole videos so we know what we're kind of facing. It's basically perforation plugging, the typical thing that wells that happen to wells over time, and you have to deal with that. So we're in the process of trying to get bids and prices. And I'm not sure if we're where we have it on the calendar right now, but we're looking at trying to do at least one of those wells here this winter and the other one probably next winter if we can't do it at the same time.
Thank you.
Any other questions, comments for Mr. Abercrombie?
I have none. Thank you, Mr. Abercrombie, for your report. We can move on to item 11. This is the general report on engineering services section activities. I'm hoping you're not going to give us a little plan.
We gave that to to start with, we're going to have our right-of-way agent, Christina Jacob, give us a small presentation on our property interests.
Hello, good evening. I'll wait for the presentation. Thank you. Hello, good evening, President Martin and committee members. My name is Christina Jacob, right-of-way agent here at SCV Water. This evening, I will be giving an overview presentation of our property interests, show you where our properties are, and provide a brief summary of the acquisition process. Next slide, please. This slide identifies some terms that you may have heard in the past through items for this committee and then board consideration, and maybe hearing again in the future, and also where these terms apply. So starting in the upper left blue box, a license agreement holds no interest in real property. This is the type of agreement we are moving forward with for our cell site locations. Next box over is a lease, and this is an interest called a leasehold interest in real property. And this type of agreement is one that we use at Central Park with the City of Santa Clarita. An easement is an interest in real property and is the type of interest that we have for pipelines and access roads. Fee simple ownership is full ownership, and this is where we have what we have for our infrastructure and our office buildings. Release or transfer of an easement or of fee simple property, or excuse me, an easement or fee simple property happens through a quitclaim. Next slide, please. Here are just a few of the properties where SCV Water is the property and fee owner and has a lease or license in place with a tenant. Starting in the upper left-hand corner, that's a photo of the Catella tank. This is a cell site location, which is one of the types of the sites in September's cell site presentation to this committee. Right below that photo is a photo of 22722 Soledad Canyon Road. This is currently in a lease with Action Family Counseling. This lease terminates in September of next year, so this may be coming back to this committee and the board next year. Central Park, the photo on the right, has recently had its Fourth Amendment lease with the City of Santa Clarita, which was presented to this committee in July of this year and approved by the board in August. We continue to meet with and communicate with the city on a regular basis through the annual Central Park meeting identified in our lease. And we also have a regular meeting with city staff that covers Central Park and any other projects that require property interest. Next slide, please. This map shows the current properties that are agency owned in orange and our facilities. If a facility is not on a property that is owned by us, then we either have an easement in place for the facility or a prescriptive easement due to our infrastructure being on the property for a duration of over 5 years. Next slide, please. So this slide shows a table of when acquisitions of either property in fee or easements require board approval per our policy. So purchases of a fair market value of land that are over $100,000, and also donations and dedications of a fair market of value of land of over $100,000, both require the board to approve. The eminent domain requires the two-third vote of the board in open session as a public hearing for a resolution of necessity, which means that the eminent domain action can then be filed. So the approval action is condemnation. There are also other ways to acquire a property. The LA County Treasurer and Tax Collector has tax defaulted property auctions and have processes for Chapter 8 agreements and a sealed bid process. The Chapter 8 agreement would be required by the county to have a resolution that would identify the property that would be entered into for a Chapter 8 agreement. So because we are a public entity, we would be able to enter into that agreement before a specific property goes to the tax defaulted property auction, which happens twice a year. And with that, that concludes my presentation. So I give this back to you, Courtney, for the ESS.
Thank you, Christina. I don't know if you want to go to any questions for Christina before I go with the rest.
We probably ought to. Thank you, Christina, for the presentation. We probably should take this in parts, I guess. If you're going to continue your report, we'll ask for any public comment on this portion.
There's no public comment.
All right, no public comment on Christina's report. Anybody have any questions about the acquisition and property process that we have?
Thank you for continuing having these small little lectures for directors. I would say please continue these. They're very helpful. But any reason why this presentation was given today? Is there an anticipation of some further action down the road?
Actually, this is on a 6-month planning schedule, but it actually is convenient because there is some future action coming to the board on the 20th.
Okay.
It just happens to coincide. But no, we have these planned out with 6 months in advance.
Understood. And Ms. Jacob, it's nice to know that we got you from the city of Santa Clarita. So it's nice that you know all the personnel involved there. So it's good to have you on the team.
Thank you. Great to be on the team.
Back to you, President Martin.
Yeah. Director Peters.
I don't know, Courtney, if you're going to get into it, but easements, how are they acquired?
Similar process to what she says of the real property. So if it is valued at greater than $100,000, then we will still have to go to the board, even if they are dedicated. Otherwise, they can be accepted by the general manager.
Okay. Do we usually get a subordination of the property owner, lien owner of the actual property for the easement?
When necessary. Not always necessary. Usually we're consulting with legal to determine that.
Thank you for the presentation. It was timely and informative. But Soren, are you having any, does your responsibility include Devil's Den and what's going on up there at all?
Devil's Den, I am aware of and involved in the process when needed. So if somebody needs to access the property for any type of work, then a license agreement is needed. But that has been my involvement thus far. If there's anything else that is coming up as far as needed for easements or acquisitions, then I'd be involved.
Okay, good. Thank you.
One quick question, Christina. On the easements, do we require an appraisal on all of those by a certified appraiser?
If it's over $100,000, then we would need backup to go to the board to obtain the approval for that easement?
Less than $100,000, we don't do an appraisal?
Yes. So less than $100,000, it's not required.
For a permanent.
But we do have an internal process where we have comparables based on past easements. So we do have an internal process to determine the value.
Okay.
Right. Specifically saying Christina Jacobs does our internal audits of the property, compares to another equal valued land, and provides that preliminary appraisal. And if it gets close to $100,000, we'll look out to do a formal.
Very good. Excellent. Glad to have you on board.
Okay.
All right. Any other questions for Christina? Thank you, Christina. And
thank you.
Forward to your report in the future.
Thank you.
So as I discussed at the project part, the reason I didn't include it with just the CIP project is this is actually a large part of those opening and closing projects have to do with development. But the fiscal year 22, we opened 150 new jobs. We managed to close 63 of those. So we're falling a little short. Those projects are extending. I'm hoping we can close more this year than we open, but we will see. Of those, 128 were development. This year to date, which is through September or a little bit further in September, I think we have October and potentially November in there as well. We've already opened 96. Of those, only 34 were development. So we have shifted some of that focus. We haven't opened as many. If we do follow that same pattern, we'll be pretty close to the number of development, but we've opened quite a few of our PAYGO and CIP projects. Advancing those projects along as you've seen the various reports and done the approvals for those. We've closed to date only 34, but we have a large number that we are actively working on closing, including a whole swath of probably 30 construction meters that were done in a fashion that we probably aren't going to be continuing with. Hopefully we'll be moving that process around. So just letting you know, there are a lot of projects, a lot of movement going on, but I'm going to try to report that out on a more regular basis as how many jobs we're managing to close. And it also gives you a sense of where we're at with development if you can start to see some of the numbers for opening new development jobs drop. Right now in the first quarter, we haven't seen that yet. We're a quarter, 25% of what we had last year. So for development, we're probably pretty close to that number. Master plan update. We will be providing a master plan update to this committee and to the board in the next couple of months. We are starting to work on that now, and hopefully we will include some of the photos from the field visit in that master plan presentation. But definitely we will let you know what is encompassed in the master plan. We will have the consultant present that to you, what is encompassed, what we've completed so far and what we have been to complete and when we anticipate those items being complete. So right now we're on schedule. It's been a very good collaborative effort. Really had a good time working with this consultant team. I think they're doing a very thorough job so far. I'm very happy with them. So, wanted to do a little show and tell. I have in the back of the room a map that our GIS team created, Jose Huerta and Chris Perez. This is the revised system map. As you can see, it's a system-wide, including by pressure zones and all of our pipelines and facilities. We have these going in the conference room, our common area inside our offices, so we can make reference to it, see exactly where the facilities are at a glance. This stuff is available on computer, but there's nothing like being able to look at a map and collaborate in person in a meeting and see how these zones can compare. So really good effort on our GIS team and on for Chris Perez and his group. Really appreciate all the work that went into this map and the GIS that goes into it. Hopefully they're going to submit this for an award because I think it's beautiful and will help us out tremendously.
Indeed.
And then lastly, I wanted to give a special thanks to Director Hambeck and Director Ford. Both of you have contributed so much to this agency and specifically to this committee. We are challenged by you sometimes, and we appreciate that. It keeps our presentation sharp. It keeps our project sharp. And I know that we will hopefully be able to continue to see you in meetings and helping out with our engineering program and keeping us sharp. As a small token of our appreciation, the staff has signed some letters and provided some candy for both of you. We wanted to provide that to you too today.
Thank you.
And that's all I had today.
Well said, Courtney, and it was a very nice gesture. And I'm going to mention that, and I want to add my thanks to your contributions to the committee during the past year and even before that. So I know we'll keep seeing you in the future. With that, item 12 has arrived, and we are adjourned. Thank you very much for your work and your presentation. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
We are adjourned.
Thank you.
So you're not
mad. No, I never had. No.